97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome to The Art of Potential Show, the show where we showcase people who are out there creating their lives and enriching the texture of our world. Today's guest is truly a special one. We have with us Larry Kitts. Larry is the founder of Kitts & Associates, which is a national executive search firm. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you. Good to hear from you.
So Larry is in California, which is really interesting because rarely do we get somebody to give us more of a national perspective on the job search and the job market and how to really connect things. So this is going to be a really terrific show. So Larry, one of my favorite questions to ask is, how did you end up as an executive search person?
I get that question a lot.
There's no major in college where you sign up and you say, hey, I want to major in executive searching.
Quite frankly, I'd never really even heard of a recruiter. I graduated college and spent 5 years in the automobile business running a rental and leasing operation.
That is a very common out-of-college first job.
Yes, it is. And that was I was in St. Louis where Enterprise is located, but I actually worked for a competitor of theirs, which was probably a mistake, but that was a dealership that had 16 different dealers, and I ran their rental operations. So I took over. My boss left. He was the operations manager for that organization, and he went to a search firm called Christopher and Long, which initially specialized in physician recruiting nationally.
Okay.
And he started a new division there, and that was in retail and apparel and industrial. So they kind of covered the whole gamut. So he called me about a year later and said, hey, you know, I know you're not making a lot of money there, because I know what you make. You might have a new car and gas, but you're not making a lot of money. Yeah, that's true. So he told me what
you can't hide from that. Like, you know, you really can't. There's like, you can't BS or anything. You're like, yep, you got it. You called it.
He pretty much knew exactly what I was making, and he was a recruiter at that point. So. So he told me what he made, and he had a group that he was managing there, and he said, I think you'll be great at this, and I really didn't know a whole lot about it. So I went in and met with them, and the owner, Keith Long, who is really an incredible salesperson and really broke down the sales piece, and we did a tremendous amount of role-playing and a lot of training.
Yeah.
And he was a very, very good salesperson. And had built a, you know, at one point I think his organization was probably doing about $3 or $4 million a year in revenue. At that, when I joined him, they were doing about half that. But it was a great experience. I stayed there about a year and a half and then left to go to a more locally focused IT recruiting firm in St. Louis.
All right. So it sounds like you had coming out of the gate, and I think this is important for our listeners to know, too, because you got something that does not happen a lot of times, which is you got awesome training, it sounds like.
I did get very good training. Keith Long was a tremendous salesperson, and he kind of developed it all himself. We did a lot of role-playing.
That is so great.
Wonderful. Yeah.
It is. And that's something that I encourage anyone who's out there looking in the job market to really pay attention to, because if you can get great training, it really pays dividends. There's no other way to put it. It will pay off tremendously. All right. So now there you are. You're recruiting in IT. You're in St. Louis, which is a far cry from California, where you are now. So how did that happen?
So, you know, I met my wife, who you know, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Her name is Julia.
Yeah, Julia was planning on moving to San Diego, and we fell in love and decided to move to San Diego together. And I basically brought that company, that same model, which was local IT recruiting, to San Diego. However, the San Diego marketplace was completely different than St. Louis. And people really didn't pay fees for IT resources.
It's a problem if you're trying to make a living.
Oh, yes. There wasn't a whole lot of business. So I did that for a year, and then I went to work for a company called Intex Summit Group. And they were a retained executive search firm focused in management consulting. And our largest account there was Deloitte Consulting. And then I brought in, actually managed IBM Global Services and Computer Science Corporation. And we had quite a robust business, a very good place to work. So good, and I really learned the whole management consulting piece and really became a little more specialized at that point.
All right, so break it down for us. What is the difference between the recruiting side and what you just said, the management consulting piece?
So, well, management consulting, our clients at Intex Summit Group were large professional services firms like Deloitte Consulting, IBM Global Services.
So people that were hired by clients to provide some service.
Exactly. Yep. And so we would work with them to find them. The only way a consulting firm can grow, it's similar to any professional services firm, it's, you know, time and materials, billable hours. So the only way they can truly grow top-line revenue is by adding, you know, people.
Yep.
So they would charge us with going out to find leadership to, you know, grow their revenues, and then staff-level people, you know, to follow those leaders as they grew their practices in consulting. So we did a lot of work in healthcare, payer, provider, life sciences, strategy, operations, finance, and information technology. So it was a pretty broad-based, you know, practice.
So your job, though, was to go out and basically find workers or to find people that then could provide billable hours and thus increase the organization's revenue.
Yep. Okay. Typically, you know, clients engage executive search firms for a number of reasons. One is to either augment, in the case of these big firms, they all have, you know, pretty robust internal consulting groups.
Mm-hmm.
So we're there to augment their pipeline of candidates. And because they have, when the economy is robust, they have a tremendous need for more people, and they really can't do that all internally. So they use a number of different, you know, search firms externally to help them augment and source candidates for them. Also, a lot of firms, the smaller boutique firms, I would say 100 people or less, which is kind of my client base now, they utilize search firms because they don't have the internal recruiting function.
Yeah.
And they will essentially outsource that function to external recruiters like myself.
So if somebody is looking for work, and we're going to be talking a bit about this because we have within our area, we have a lot of folks who are graduating from college and they're kind of in a different frame of mind. But then we also have a lot of executives, some of whom have been employed for longer periods of time than they would like. How do people get in front of you or someone that you work with and get their name out there and get into the, you know, the pipeline so they're considered
Sure.
for opportunities?
Well, that's a great question, because the reality is, you know, recruiters that get paid by corporations like myself, and I can't really talk to recruiters that accept money from candidates mm-hmm. to place them, because that's a whole different model altogether.
Yep.
But recruiters like us who are paid by the companies and they are our clients, we tend to be fairly specialized in where our client base is. So in order for a candidate to get some value out of a recruiter, I would reference Kennedy Information and Kennedy Career Services. They've got a product called the RecruiterRedbook.com. And you can go in and research search firms, recruiters that specialize via industry, via geography. You can really break it down, because really a recruiter is only as good as their client base. And their client base
right.
changes pretty quickly. So you really, if you have a specialty, like say you're a healthcare IT executive, you can go into the Recruiter Red Book and look at recruiters that specialize in healthcare IT. And I would, you know, you could broadcast your resume to, you know, 10 or 15 of those people, depending on what your geographic target is.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what to put on your resume and how to make it look good for somebody like Larry. You are listening to the Art of Potential show. Please be sure to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential show. We are having a fascinating conversation on executive recruiting and how to connect with jobs and how to really, like, you know, put yourself into the job market. We are talking with Larry Kitts. Larry is an executive recruiter who also deals with executive management. So, Larry, big question that a lot of people are working with, resumes. What is your take on resumes?
Well, that's a tough question. Everybody has a different opinion on how long a resume should be and what should be on there. And in our brief conversation, we talked about, you know, what we're seeing in the trend now is to put as many keywords on your resume as possible so they get picked up by the talent management and the applicant tracking systems out there.
Well, so, let's break that down real quick. So what's happening, if you're not aware, is that people are submitting resumes online, correct?
Absolutely.
That goes into a computer, a talent management program that looks for keywords. So what's happening is a lot of people are saying, all right, so I'm going to take every keyword and put it on my resume somewhere.
Exactly. And I think Taleo is the biggest one, but there's a number of them out there. And what they do is they when a company gets a resume, it just dumps them automatically into a database, and when they have a job opening, they will do a keyword search on the resumes, and it will pull up the relevant resumes based on the keywords they find on the resume. So people have found that, you know, they're putting as many skills on their resume, even though, you know, maybe they're really not that deep in that particular skill set. So what we're seeing is recruiters, is people are the resumes are actually getting worse. They're getting more length. they're getting less focused, and they really don't tell a good story. So in my opinion, you know, unless I like, you know, 3 pages at the most, I prefer 2. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen executives that are making $1 million a year that have a 1-page resume.
Yes, I have too, with few words on it.
Right, exactly. And I guess if you're making $1 million a year, kind of, you know, that helps. But in my opinion, it's important to have very specific accomplishments and very specific skills that you have, and really showcase those on the resume. Keep it brief, to the point. Highlight your educational background, any certifications you have, and any leadership roles that you've had in the community. Those kind of things are important to have on your resume.
So somebody submits their resume, and it feels like it's going into this black hole, because it is.
Right. <yeah. laughs>
It goes into this electronic Netherlands. And when it comes up, it's coming up in front of somebody. Who is that somebody that it's coming up in front of?
Well, typically an internal recruiter in a corporation, or the head of talent management or talent acquisition. You know, the names are kind of changing a little bit and morphing now. And typically, you know, those people are charged with, depending on how big the organization is, they tend to have, you know, in big corporations, you're going to find people that are, you know, dedicated to a business unit or a specific skill set. I mean, for example, Deloitte, they're structured along industry verticals and horizontal.
What does that mean?
So they would have an industry vertical for healthcare. They would have an industry vertical for manufacturing. They would have an industry vertical for life sciences.
So what is industry vertical? Like, I'm thinking literally like up and down.
Yeah, it's just the way that they structure their service lines to go to industry. When they provide consulting services to manufacturing, they will hire people that have, you know, manufacturing experience first. And then maybe operations experience would be their horizontal skill set, and IT would be one, and finance would be another, and tax would be another. So that's kind of how the big consulting firms organize. They've got their industry specialty, and then they have their functional skill set, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they recruit. You know, so they'll have people dedicated to an industry, and in some cases, you know, a specific function like data analytics or business intelligence, yeah, or, you know, IT implementation. So you tend to get pretty, in the big organizations, these recruiters are very specialized. They understand the skill sets very well, the culture very well, and they add a lot of value to the process.
So they're looking at a resume, and they're looking at the keywords that have popped up. And because of what you're saying, what I'm gathering is they can immediately separate, you know, the great candidates and the ones who are trying to look great but really aren't.
Absolutely. They can tell. And I would say for the big companies, they're looking for the brand names. You know, have you worked for an Accenture? Have you worked for an IBM? Have you worked for a GM or a Ford? Whatever the biggest leaders are in the industry vertical that you're focusing on.
Okay, so they're looking at that. They see on the resume, oh, this person has some depth. They have, you know, this is someone we should talk to. What is the next step that happens after that?
Well, you know, it depends on, that's hard to say depending on the company, but typically they're reaching out to, you know, that particular candidate, either mm-hmm. via email or a phone call.
Okay.
And if they show interest, now it depends on how they source the resume, right? That's a big factor. I mean, if it's a passive candidate, it's a different approach than an active candidate.
All right. So what does that mean? Educate me here. What is passive and active? Because everyone I know who wants a job is pretty actively wanting it.
Well, good point. So an active candidate is somebody, you know, actively seeking a new job. Whether they're employed or not, they're actively on the market for a new position.
Mm-hmm.
A passive candidate, there's different degrees of passive candidates. Some are, actively considering options based mm-hmm. on factors, if they got more money, if they were in a different geography. Typically, it's some specific driver that might motivate them to make a move, but they don't need to make a move.
Okay.
And then there's, on the other end of the spectrum, there's the completely passive candidate who's sitting at his desk and he gets a phone call from a recruiter like me and says, hey, by the way, I've got a better opportunity for you. Are you open to listening to it? And, you know, most people are open to considering new career options if it means more money or a better career track or more responsibility. So there's a lot of different degrees to that, but that's the difference between active and passive.
Well, okay, so how would a passive person's resume get in front of the person who's hiring for a job if they're just passively sitting there? Wouldn't they have had to, like, put it out in some way?
Well, these companies have databases that go back, 10 years now.
Okay.
So these recruiters, and even in-house recruiters now, are pulling up passive candidates. Are candidates that had maybe submitted a resume or were active 5 years ago. And they might, reach out to them and broadcast a particular opening
mm-hmm.
that fits their skill set. But also, recruiters are, when you look at passive candidates, recruiters are the driving force for passive candidates, no question about it. External recruiters more so than internal recruiters. So, for example, if I've got a charge from, I'm working with a client of mine right now, they're looking to build an internal consulting group. So, the vast majority of candidates that we find them are going to be past candidates that are currently employed with a company doing, the type of work that they're looking for them to do internally.
So are you going actively out then and soliciting resumes? Where are you getting your resumes and candidates from then?
I would say LinkedIn is our primary source.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a network of a database that we've built internally over the years of consultants. So we obviously use that. We use job boards. We use just about every avenue you can think of. So we're not discriminating on where we find our candidates. So.
How many phone calls do you make a day?
On a good day?
Mm-hmm.
How many should I make?
You to tell secrets here, but
the old adage was a minimum of 50 a day. I must say I don't do that many anymore. And now with LinkedIn is changing the game. And, we could talk about in-mails. A lot of people, the newer generation responds more to electronic media than mm-hmm. they do voicemails and phone calls. And the irony of everybody having a cell phone now is you still get more voicemail now than you did when people didn't even have cell phones. You know, so.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about how to use those tools that are out there, networking. And we're going to talk a lot about LinkedIn because that's changing the face of a lot of this recruiting. So you are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra talking to Larry Kitz. Larry is just, oh my gosh, Larry, you are giving us such great information. So if you are wanting to be recruited by someone or you know somebody who's looking for work, this is a do not miss show. So, Larry, you were just talking about people who have been unemployed for a while or people who are looking for work absolutely having to hit their networks. How do they do that?
Well, there's a lot of online tools now, and there's job aggregating websites that will, you type in your skill sets, and they will broadcast an email to you every day with new job postings that fit that criteria.
What would one of them be? Like, give me a name of a website.
You know, that's a good, I think Kennedy Career Services.
Okay.
But that's probably for more executive level. Mm-hmm. The ones I'm aware of are kind of more at the executive level.
Mm-hmm.
Sixfigurejobs.com, The Ladders, all of those have some component of a job aggregating or job scraper, I think they call it. There's a couple different terms out there. So they will actually scour the net every day for new job postings that match your criteria.
Love that. Saves you tons of time.
Oh, it's an incredible tool. And that tool has been around a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
They've certainly honed it, and there's a lot of good ones. I honestly don't know the top ones anymore because there's a lot of them out there. But you can certainly, if you do your research and Google it, I'm sure you can find them.
Okay, so you get all these different job aggregating websites to start sending you jobs about the things that you're interested in. My guess is you probably target your where you want to live, your geography, and where you want to be.
Sure.
How open do job seekers need to be to moving around or expanding their searches?
Well, that depends on how quickly they want to find a job and how necessary that is. I think, you know, obviously when you cast a bigger geographic net, you're going to have a lot more opportunities to look at. And, you know, we talked yesterday, there's some parts of the country, if you go up to the Bay Area in California, they're at probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 4 or 5% unemployment up there. And you go down the South and there's parts down there that are 12 or 13% unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on your need and your skill set. You know, obviously the Bay Area is tech heavy and
right.
You know, most they're recruiting people usually with technical skills, but the you're going to have a lot more opportunities if you cast a broader net, both on the types of jobs you're looking at and the geography.
So let's say you're casting a big net. How do you get your network to help funnel leads and refer you into different leads while you're expanding your search?
Well, that's where LinkedIn is an incredible tool because mm-hmm. if you're looking at a particular employer, let's say, you know, let's just say Deloitte, because we've been using that as a model, and you see a job at Deloitte that is a fit for you, you can go into your network, see who you know that works at Deloitte. You can ping them and say, look, I saw this job order. Can you refer me into this? Because the employees at big corporations now are all incentivized to bring in new employees, and they get referral fees and they get bonuses and what have you.
So they have I just want to talk about that real quick. So people who refer other people in are getting money for doing it.
They're incentivized to bring in new employees.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we talked about that yesterday. It used to be, you know, internal referrals used to account for about 15% of the new hires in corporate America. that number is closer to 30% now in the course of, you know, 4 or 5 years. So companies are really relying on that as, you know, good referral source, candidates that tend to stay in the corporation longer, and more higher productive candidates when they hire them, too.
Which is really interesting. There's that old adage, you know, birds of a feather flock together, and corporations are turning that into a profit model. I mean, the idea that if you're good, you're going to bring in somebody else who's good. You can't say enough to people when you get down to the nitty-gritty and, like, in the trenches. When people trust you and refer you in, it just opens up so many doors, or has the potential to do that.
That is the number one networking tool that anybody looking for a job should utilize right now, in my opinion.
Use their friends, use LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Getting referrals into their company that they're currently mm-hmm. working with.
So LinkedIn, there you are. You're looking at your network. You see that you have friends. So you ping them or you inbox them.
Yeah, you can send them an email. And I think a lot of the corporations even let you reference. You can look up the job on LinkedIn and reference that particular job order so they know exactly which one. And then that particular resource in the corporation can refer you directly to, you know, the recruiting or talent management people in that area. Now, different companies have different levels of sophistication around that. So, you know, the important message is to, you know, if nothing else, pick up the phone and say, you know, if I send you my resume, here's the job. Get it on top of the stack, because those people will be on top of the pile. And the reality is, when you submit a resume online, I have heard that if you're not in the first, you know, 15% of applicants, your resume typically doesn't even get looked at. So,
you know, I haven't heard that, but it makes sense to me, because I was talking to someone who said one of the big banks here in Charlotte is Nations Bank, and they had, Bank of America, and they have over 1 million people apply to work there a year.
Yeah, absolutely. They have thousands of people applying to each opening, and the recruiters can only look at so many resumes. So they take the first, you know, let's say 200. If they don't find what they're looking for there, then they might open it up again and consider other ones. But, you know, typically they're going to find a couple of good candidates out of that first initial, you know, resume grab.
But to your point, it also makes sense to then look on your LinkedIn profile and see who you know who works at Bank of America or, you know, one of these consulting firms or whatever, and say, hey, can you get me in front of the person who's hiring?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You will bypass the you know, reams of resumes that they have, and you'll go top to the list, because they are all making a very concentrated effort to find employees that way.
No, you absolutely have to. And I think that's one of the things that people who are in the job market need to keep in mind. In the end, you're still dealing with a human.
Yeah, absolutely.
A person who's overworked, underpaid, and tired, and they really just want the ideal candidate to walk in and be like, I'm here, your problems are over,
absolutely,
and you can trust me. And then it's like, bam, all right, thank you, that was easy.
Right. And they all have a vested interest in hiring people that their employees bring to the table.
All right. So what are some of the mistakes you see people making anywhere as they're looking for work?
You know, that's a good question. I would say resumes, in my mind, don't get enough attention because people just assume they're going into a database. But the reality is, you know, if the resume does get to the hiring manager or the recruiter or whoever's in charge of the process, you have to have a good-looking resume, and I'm kind of appalled at, you know, some of the resumes I see out there. And it doesn't take a whole. There's so many resume writing tools and tutorials on the internet that you've really, you know, that's your first foot into the door, and you need to pay a little more attention and have a good solid resume that speaks to your accomplishments. So
wow,
I would say that's important, and people have lost sight of that, I think.
Well, And that would not have been the first thing I would have thought you would have said. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to hear more of the common mistakes. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show. Please be sure to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook, and we'll be right back.
Need your local culture fix? The lifestyle section of chapelboro.com is the only place to go for food and dining, restaurant views, health tips, fashion, and local culture commentary. Want to know what the best shows and venues to attend? Lifestyle has show listings for Deepak, Cat's Cradle, and the Art Center, and many more. And be sure to check back after the show for reviews and commentary. There's even information on local neighborhoods and schools. Keep yourself in style with Chapel Boro's Lifestyle.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is The Art of Potential Show. Kristen Heemstra, I'm talking with Larry Kitts. Larry is giving us unbelievable advice about the job search, job seeking, and all things related to that. So, Larry, you said one of the biggest mistakes that job seekers are making right now is not paying enough attention to their resumes. What should they be putting on there that they're not putting on there?
Well, we talked a little bit about that. I think it's important to put accomplishments.
Accomplishments.
Yes, very specific accomplishments, not just generalities. You see a lot of buzzwords, a lot of generalities, but you need to put real concrete examples of how you impacted an organization. And I think a lot of people lose sight of that on the resumes.
So you have to make it real for the person so they can look at it and they can, I mean, you have to, it sounds like, give very detailed.
Well, for example, on the consulting side, somebody that went in and implemented a program that saved the company $10 million or whatever that number is.
Right.
You know, it's important to define your role and your impact in that particular project so people can understand what you've done. To have a general verbiage like, worked on a project, saved the company, millions of dollars. I see that kind of verbiage on a resume, whereas a much more concrete example and specific skills that you brought to the table, your impact on that project, that's what clients are looking for. That's what companies are looking for.
That makes total sense to me. I mean, it really does because it allows someone almost to visually in their mind picture you doing whatever it is you do, whereas, saving the company money really doesn't give you something to latch on to mentally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You said earlier resumes aren't telling a story. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, resumes have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, like any other literary piece of work, I suppose.
I never would have equated that, but yes, okay.
But you want it to be coherent. You want it to relay an important message. I mean, this is representing your life's work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you really should be able to highlight your accomplishments. Be able to highlight your education, assuming you have a good educational background, and the things you've done in the community that would talk to your leadership skills and your community involvement, that kind of stuff. So I think people want to see well-rounded people that have a good career track, know how to write a solid resume, can impart their accomplishments on that resume, and can tell a good story and have a good career. So I think it's there's so many tools out there to write a good resume. There's really no excuse not to have
one in
this day and age. And I think people just assume because of all the applications online that people aren't looking at the resume. Well, they're looking at both those documents.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't align, that's one problem. But if they pick up a resume.
I wouldn't even think that would even be an issue, but I guess it would.
Well,
oh, my gosh.
It can be.
Oh,
and
wow.
If they don't look at the resume and they're not impressed by a resume, then, they're going to go to somebody that has a more impressive resume.
Which is really important because sometimes it's not that the other person with the better resume has done more than you or done less than you. It's just that they put it into a better format than you.
In some cases, absolutely.
Yeah. What are some other things that job seekers are not
doing?
Well,
you hit the nail on the head. They need to work the network hard. They need to put in the time. In a full-time job search, it's what recruiters do, as well, which is really working the network, reaching out to people, alumni, companies you used to work for, employees that you've known in organizations, recruiters. I mean, recruiters are tremendous tools if you utilize it appropriately, which is finding people that specialize in your area of expertise and geographically, because they'll do a lot of legwork for you. If I have a good candidate that calls me, that's a consultant that's willing to travel, and they have experience with, you know, Accenture or IBM or Deloitte, and they call me and say, hey, I'm looking for a job, well, I'm going to go to work for them, and it's in my best interest to find them an opportunity and get an offer from one of my clients. So they're incentivized to work on your behalf as well, and a good recruiter can go a long way, but you have to reach out to the ones that are really focused in your area of expertise.
And it seems like this is the kind of thing where you also not just focus but have experience, because my experience has been that people in the same industry tend to know each other because industries recycle the same folks.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Over and over again, even though they're at different companies.
Right. No question.
Ebb and flow. So the more experienced ones tend to just know more people.
Well, especially management consulting, because there's only so many people that will manage that lifestyle, you know, the ones that are traveling all the time. It's a very limited pool of resources. So.
People are willing to put themselves out there like that.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the best job seekers, or what are some of the best things people are out there doing? Obviously, work in the network is one. A great resume is one. I guess where I want to go with this is what, let's talk for a minute about interviews. How are those people interviewing in a different way than others?
You know, that's a good question. I would say that in my opinion, the most important thing is be prepared for an interview.
Right there, you know, on the spot, bam, phone call, you're being interviewed.
Oh, from that perspective, that you're not talking about an on-site interview.
Well, both.
Well, I mean, if you're getting a call from a recruiter, you're not expecting to be interviewed. Right.
No, that's true.
But I would say that, you know, clearly you want to do your homework, your due diligence on the company you're talking about, the specifics of the job, and being able to relate. You hit the nail on the head earlier when you said, you know, a recruiter in-house wants to say, okay, here's the person that's going to fill the job. You know, I don't have to work any harder.
Right. My to-do list is done.
So your job is to, you know, sell that recruiter, or whether that's an internal or external recruiter, on why you are a fit for that specific job. That is your number one job. And, you know, clearly you have to have the skills that align with the job. But assuming that is the case, then you have to relay your experience, your accomplishments, into why you would be an effective hire for that particular role. And really, I think people just kind of take a lot of things for granted in the interviewing process.
How so?
Well, they don't prepare. They don't understand the company. They don't understand the organizational structure. They don't understand the reporting structure. Now, you know, you might not be able to ascertain all that information, but it's very easy in today's world to find out a lot of information about a company. So there's no excuse not to do your homework and be prepared, know the company, know what their challenges are, know what their, you know, their number one clients are, what their revenues are, who their leadership is. That kind of stuff should be, you know, it only takes a few minutes.
So I
would say being prepared, understanding the company, the corporate environment, the role, and then most importantly, how your skills are a good fit for the role, and being able to tell that story, being able to, you know, give them the elevator pitch, if you will, and have your message down, you know, have your accomplishments down, and why you will be an effective hire for that company.
That's great advice. It is. And that takes some vetting. I mean, you really do have to go through your own life story and vet the accomplishments, which you had to do anyway on the resume.
Right.
And you have to be able to get that down. One question I have for you. So if a person, actually, I want to ask this differently. The assumption is, of course, that the job has been posted. How often do you see people looking and trying to recruit for jobs they're not necessarily posting?
From the candidate perspective?
Just going
into a company without a job order?
Yeah.
You know, you do see that, absolutely. There's people that are targeting specific companies to go to work for. I would say in this market, that's incredibly, you know, difficult to move the needle and get an interview based on that. Because when you're looking at bigger corporations, they all have specific job orders they're working on.
Right,
and like we talked about, each recruiter is kind of focused in a particular area.
Well, Larry, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, where would they go to do that?
Sure. It's Larry@KitsAssociates.com. And you can visit my website at www.kitsassociates.com. And again, I specialize in management consulting and professional services nationally, and would love to talk to anybody.
Terrific. And I will also have that on the Art of Potential's website, artofpotential.com. Thank you for listening to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra. And again, be sure to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook.